I'll bring you the April 5th, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Chicago studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Scott Pettinger, N9ALY, with this rain report. As we draw closer to the 2013 Dayton Hamvention schedule for mid-May, our thoughts turn toward our annual pilgrimage to the Hamvention. It is, after all, the primary source of program audio for these rain reports throughout the year. This past year, we tried something different, running some interviews that Rain founder and producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, conducted out of the rain booth, something he hasn't done for at least 20 years. Two of the more thought-provoking that we're just now airing for the first time are Jeff Butterfield, a Kentucky University professor. We'll hear his story later this month. The other features a former radio station owner who happens to be blind named Dave Marthaus, N2AAM, a guy who has some definite ideas about the state of commercial AM and FM radio and where it's going. But first, some preliminaries, like where he's from and how he got into amateur radio.
I live in a place called Brookneal, Virginia, which is about 24 miles south of Lynchburg. Most people get involved in ham radio, meeting another ham and things like that. This is kind of a bizarre concept. My Elmer in amateur radio that kind of first lit the fuse, so to speak, was not a ham. He was a shortwave listener. This was back when I was a little kid in the early 1960s. My uncle Ben built every kind of electronic kit that existed. He wasn't a ham, but he was an avid shortwave listener. But he told me about these people called ham radio operators, and it fascinated me, and I had that in the back of my mind. One thing and another happened, college and the start of a career in broadcasting and so on. Anyway, I did not become a ham until June the 3rd of 1978. And you know, when I look back on it, I kind of wish it occurred back in the 60s when I first got that idea, when first exposed to these, quote, people who were ham radio operators. My first contact was on the WR2 AMI 2-meter repeater in a place called Oakland, New Jersey. I was living in a place called Clifton, New Jersey at the time, one of communities in North Jersey that were bedroom communities to New York City. It was using a six-channel used Drake TR-22 that I bought. That was my first rig, the original Drake, the original six-channel crystal-controlled radio. The thing was built like a tank. Heaven forbid if you dropped it on your foot. I worked a guy whose call was W2IQ. His name was Hank Clark. And I worked him as my first contact in amateur radio. And I remember trying to make the repeater. I couldn't get into the repeater that well, didn't have any kind of outdoor antennas. So I had to assume all sorts of strange positions with my Drake TR-22 and ended up holding it virtually above my head like the Statue of Liberty with the whip antenna sticking out of the top of the radio. And I had to do all sorts of strange jumping around to get a signal in. So definitely a very remembered first contact. For the past 13 and a half, 14 years or so, I owned WODI Radio in Brookneal, Virginia with a friend, and just sold that about a year and a half ago or so, and still in the broadcast industry at a freelance and consulting basis. Certainly, you know, broadcasting and amateur radio, they're similar, but they're not. One is different enough that it doesn't make the other one stale. So the vocation is commercial broadcasting, but the avocation is amateur radio, and love them both.
Let's talk about broadcasting. How has it changed in the 13 years that you were owner of WODI?
Well, back when we put the radio station on the air, it was off the air due to various things, which I'm not going to go into now. We put the thing back on the air. Everything was analog. We used reel-to-reel tape, vinyl records, and CDs. And we had to go with the technology that was in the radio station before we could upgrade and modernize. And, of course, we turned to fully digital, automated computer-controlled stuff, music on hard drives, and things like that, like every other station in America does. But originally, for the first year and a half, we used analog cassettes, tape cartridges, which are like the old-time 8-track machines, but a bit different. They were used in the professional side of broadcasting, and of course, reel-to-reel tape.
As a blind person, what kind of hands-on did you have?
Well, in the analog days, I would stick braille labels on the stuff I needed to. And as far as producing and editing tape, I just cut tape like anybody else would with a razor blade and an editing block. The only difference that a blind person would do as far as tape editing over a sighted person. A sighted person would find the points that you want to edit on a tape, mark it with a grease pencil. I couldn't see the marks or feel them from a grease pencil, so I would take a fingernail and very ever so slightly make a feelable mark on the tape at the points that I wanted to edit, then place it in the editing block and just cut where the marks were, remove the piece I wanted to cut out, and throw the Scotch editing tape over the point on the block where the edit was made, and ever so gently pull the tape out of the block, and presto, if everything worked right, you would have a good broadcast quality professional edit.
Once you're not intentional, how'd you deal with all that non-visually?
Well, used a program called SoundForge, which is a digital editor that many other people in broadcasting use, sighted broadcasters, but of course I had a device which spoke everything that I needed to hear on the screen using synthesized speech. All blind computer users use that methodology.
Hear.
As a result of that, it was just a matter of using SoundForge or any other editing program, just like the way my sighted counterparts do, and it was exactly the same with broadcast automation systems. Of course, being a radio station owner as a blind person, I got to customize everything so that literally everything was universally accessible out of the box, and there were never really accessibility issues other than the fact that certain things I had to boost my learning curve about so I would be able to implement those methods and issues regarding accessibility.
Now, are you still using SoundForge?
Yes, yeah, still use SoundForge.
What is your thought about IVOC?
IVOC stands for in-band on channel, which is the same as HD radio, by the way, which if you look at it technically, it's really in-band off channel. It's a digital form of audio broadcasting, and I think the technology would have perhaps worked better than it does in terms of universal acceptance if it came in years ago. But I really think that IVOC, digital audio broadcasting, is too little and too late. And within 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a very large paradigm change in broadcasting because it will not only encompass over-the-air radio broadcasting, it's going to encompass, and it's starting now, internet audio content and video and multimedia content developed and delivered over mobile devices, whether they're iPads, iPhones, and other types of Windows smartphone devices. And all of that stuff is going to be platform agnostic, whether you're listening to the radio or a mobile device. And as a result, it's not going to matter so much as what brings you your programming, AE over the radio and or internet or whatever. It's the content itself. And the thing is, content is king, and the truck that brings you the broadcasting isn't so much going to matter.
You're listening to A Conversation Blind Broadcast Consultant Dave Marthaus, N2AAM, had with Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, from the Rain booth at the 2012 Dayton Hamvention. We'll conclude their conversation in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available 24/7 from therainreport.com.
Live and local radio is, unfortunately, the way it is now, because there's so many major companies that control radio stations, is sort of becoming an endangered species. However, since the entry point to, let's say, internet audio broadcasting is so economically low compared to over-the-air radio broadcasting, plus there's no FCC issues with the internet broadcasting and so on, that perhaps there might be a way to carve out small local niches for niche-based local broadcasting. Let's say you get somebody, you could go on the internet and send out audio that can be heard all over the world, but you don't necessarily have to broadcast all over the world. Like, let's say you want to broadcast to only to, let's pick something you're familiar with, Des Plaines, Illinois. And let's say you only want to broadcast to Des Plaines, Illinois. You can set up a stream. The fact that people can hear it all over the world wouldn't matter because your programming will be only local stuff for Des Plaines, Illinois, and you concentrate on selling to that audience and delivering very specific and very local programming for Des Plaines, Illinois. And even though it's heard all over the world, you concentrate on that niche, and maybe you can then perhaps carve out enough stuff for that local niche that can amortize you financially. I was thinking in terms of commercial broadcasting where you can make some bucks doing it. Low power FM, I don't think it would impact LPFM because, again, if you make good enough content and you promote it well, people will come. Because in this new paradigm-shifted world of media delivery, content is king. You have to not consider the traditional FM listener just the listener. Remember, we're talking platform-independent, agnostic delivery. You could put the content on your local FM radio station on the internet. You can do that, so whether someone listens on FM radio or the internet, they're still getting the same content. They're still getting, let's say, your local content for Des Plaines, Illinois. Since it is so relatively, quote, easy, unquote, to put up internet audio, that would be a good place for all the local voices to go, or at least go until there may be a sea change or something in the future in terms of regulations. But in the immediate future, unfortunately, and I'm a person who loves classic over-the-air radio as well, has worked in it for 30 years, since the late 70s, worked in it commercially. A long road to hoe to see local radio come back the way we remember it. And I hate to say that because I truly love that type of radio. I love internet audio. I love the new future that we're going to be in. But at the same time, there is something that is truly incredibly magic about listening to radio on that little box in your bedroom at 3 o'clock in the morning, or riding around in the wee small hours in your car, listening to signals waft in and out from hundreds and even thousands of miles away.
What about high-definition radio you now find on certain sidebands or various stations?
Well, it's going to be there, and a lot of stations have it, but as far as customer acceptance, it's been around for about 10 years, and there is, in my opinion, not much buzz about it on the streets. Most people don't even know what HD radio is. When they say HD radio or high definition radio, they say, oh, Sirius XM satellite. Most of the people don't even know that HD exists in the broadcast venue, AM and FM. IBOC is just a name for the transmission of HD radio. HD radio is the marketing term for IBOC. IBOC is an engineering term, while HD radio is the consumer-level marketing term. In my opinion, engineering-wise, I would call it IBAC, as an in-band adjacent channel, because it makes the signal wider. In my personal opinion, it just dumps a whole lot of digital crud on the AM band. IBAC has been around in one shape, form, or another at least 10 to 12 years, and it has been in the planning stages since the early 1990s. Interestingly enough, the first digital audio broadcasting was not IBAC. The first people that got a stump on DAB, or digital audio broadcasting, were the Europeans and the Canadians. They came up with a system called Eureka 147, which used a large multiplex of frequencies at L-band, 1.4 gigahertz, and in Europe, what is known as L-band in band 3 of UHF, or VHF, which was, believe it or not, part of the 220 ham band, which does not exist in ITU region 2 and 3. A separate spectrum entirely, and what that is because the European broadcasting model is very much different than the U.S. broadcasting model. The Europeans would take a whole bunch of stations, let's say 10 or 12 stations, multiplex them on a single transmitter, and transmit them on different frequencies all over the country. So you would tune to this 1.5 megahertz wide signal, and then you would dial through that signal, and all those channels will be muxed or multiplexed on top of or within that 1.5 or however large megahertz wide mask of audio. Interestingly enough, the only place where that type of broadcasting is thriving is Britain. The Canadians have been turning off their L-band digital audio broadcasting Eureka 147 streams in the past couple of years due to virtual complete lack of consumer interest, even though that system has been up for over 10 years.
Why is it working in Britain?
I can't really tell you. I got to talk to some of my colleagues over there and find out, because it's kind of a weird anomaly that seems to be working for them. IBOC on FM has more chance of surviving in some way, shape, or form, because I really don't think that IBOC on AM is that practical, necessary, or worth it. Let me put on my crystal ball hat here and say that I will wager that IBOC will be a has-been within two decades, because internet mobile devices and wireless connectivity are going to be everywhere. It virtually is everywhere now in a good portion of the United States, at least other parts of the developing world. Chrysler's got stuff for high-end Chryslers, and a few other auto manufacturers do. I don't have the details readily in my head or in front of me, so I can't really give you super specifics on. Media delivery, i.e. broadcasting, is going to be a heck of an interesting ride in the next 10 to 15 years. It's sort of like you play checkers, then maybe you graduate to chess. That's a one-dimensional board, playing checkers or chess. Well, now that everything is up for grabs and internet audio delivery and video and print delivery is coming to mobile devices and in many cases is already here, that one-dimensional checker or chess game has evolved to a three-dimensional checker or chess game, analogous to the chess game that they used to play on the Starship Enterprise in the real first generation of Star Trek. It is going to be a very interesting ride for the next 10 to 15 years in the broadcast industry.
This has been another piece of audio from the 2012 Dayton Hamvention. This time we featured a conversation between blind broadcast consultant Dave Marthaus, N2AAM, and Rains Apali, KC9RP, conducted in the Rain Booth in 2012. Next time, we'll bring you another conversation from the Rain Booth featuring a Kentucky University professor whose classroom today is virtually empty. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 to 2013 Rain. All rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Rain Report, I'm Scott Pettinger, N9ALY, bidding you very 7-3 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.